Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Abbey's Road is brought to you by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Abbey's Road with Abbey Laporte, Episode 5, Sex, Drugs, and Choices.
This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much.
Hi, welcome to Abbey's Road. I'm Abbey Laporte, the show where we talk about teen issues for teens, parents, educators, and anyone else who's interested. Today we're having on Karis Dennison, and you can see her there.
Hi.
Karis is a specialist. She's an expert in adolescent issues. She's worked with many different schools. She works on issues such as ethics, social justice, and health education. She teaches high school in Marin County, and I'm reading her bio, consults nationwide with schools, businesses, and parents on the interconnectedness of these topics. So I know Karis personally through when she came into my school to speak. And mostly what she talked to us about actually was, she talked a lot about sex education, making good decisions, decisions that you make for yourself and not for others.
Right.
And she also talked to us about drugs and drinking actually too. So, first of all, let's start off with, I know I listed what you do, but what is it exactly that you do?
I'm still trying to figure out exactly what I do.
Fair enough.
But no, you're right. So half time I teach high school, and then the other half, mm-hmm. I work with schools and families and teenagers around issues of, you know, activism, social justice, ethics, cool. and human development. So in other words, I try to get people to validate the conversations that have to do with what teenagers are experiencing outside the classroom, mm-hmm. And validate that as just as important as what they're learning inside the classroom, and perhaps even bring some of that into the classroom itself.
Yeah.
So it's not just about algebra. Some of what teenagers are experiencing outside the classroom, I would warrant to say, is as important, if not more.
Yeah, not more, because if you have an experience that doesn't feel right outside the classroom, you can't even start to focus within the classroom.
Exactly.
As a teen, I can say that.
Well, you probably know that, right, Abby?
Yeah, I feel like I've learned that lesson, that you have to be very careful about how you're making decisions in your own life, because it really does affect everything else. If you have a bad experience or if you feel regret for something, and you talk a lot, Karis talks a lot about the keywords, regret, guilt,
and shame.
And
wow,
shame.
That's an amazing memory, Abby.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
I read your thing, to be fair. I did some prep work.
And what is really hard is that what I'm seeing, I used to teach English years and years ago. And and what I'm seeing now is this trend that we have all these teenagers who are, you know, graduating with like 4.0 GPAs.
Yeah.
But they're real heavy on the academic skills and the kind of, as we talked about, like the intellectual assertiveness.
Yeah.
But very little practice on how do you make choices that do not end in regret, guilt, or shame? And then how do you define what those are? So.
And it's kind of a strange disconnect, because like you're saying, there's kids, I know these kids that are so intellectually aware and stand up for themselves and know what they need to do in that part of their lives, but then kind of horribly confused about making choices in other areas and standing up for themselves in other areas of your life.
That's so true.
Or of their life.
So true.
And so that kind of leads us, you were teaching English,
mm-hmm.
and then how did you get drawn to this? How did you start doing this?
Yeah, it's so funny too, because when I first started leaning towards doing all this, there were very mm-hmm. few people said the words human development.
Yeah.
There was like health class.
Yeah.
Which involved like, you know, a jock strap and a dildo. But then all of a sudden people would start calling me about 15 years ago saying, you know, how do I do what you do? I'm really interested in what you do. And, you know, and back then there were no degrees in human development or anything like that. So, I always tell them, you know, you go to college and then you wander around for a while and then you become a cocktail waitress and was a wilderness ranger for a while. And then you wander around Asia and start teaching English. And then, what I did was
very direct career path.
Exactly. Completely. And I just write it down and people just follow it word for word.
Good.
So I started teaching English and I was teaching 8th, 9th, and 12th grade English and then helping run outdoor programs.
In Sonoma County?
No, actually it started in LA.
Okay.
And then, much to my dismay, because I was from here, but it was a really prestigious independent school. And and I, at that point, I was, I think, 25 or 20, no, I was 26. And but I started noticing that a lot of people can teach English well.
Yeah.
But I noticed that a lot of my students, a lot of what they were experiencing and that were really, with where they were really learning and asking to learn, it was happening in between classes or
That's
on the outdoor trips or, you know, I was coaching too, or it would happen out in the court and, and that they really wanted to have these conversations and really lacked the tools and the space
or people to even talk
to. Because there were so
teachers wouldn't, you know, be willing to have a conversation like that. You're much more open about things like that than
and that's,
a lot
so,
of
that's
teachers,
what's so
I
key, I think.
Yeah,
and so I really started feeling like I was, or we as a culture were failing these kids. And so a lot of the, I sort of just started, then I looked to see, okay, so what kind of stuff is out there to put in the classroom and what, well, who is doing stuff like this? And there's just back then was some really, really bad stuff out there.
Oh,
like, you know, the textbooks, you know, like, whatever, like,
well, not to mention now there's, abstinence only education,
which is don't even get me started. Yeah, so
well,
that's so I started.
That
that's good. We should.
Yeah.
So I realized that there wasn't a lot to be intimidated by because not a lot was out there at that point. So I started writing curriculum, and then I started I would just show up and start talking. It really the thing that pisses me off about our culture is that everyone talks. Young people are so stigmatized, and you all are somehow. There's this culture of mistrust and you have this,
very,
this stereotypes that you've lost your way. And I just feel really strongly that, that if there are, first of all, I talk to about 500 teenagers a week and not a lot of them are lost, but if they are, I feel like we've sort of are leading them there.
Yeah.
So I think if we simply get out of young people's way and give them some tools,
very good point.
They really, have just, you know, I've learned so much more from teenagers than I ever met. Or learned in graduate school.
Yeah.
I hope none of my professors ever, they probably don't listen to this show, right?
But it's surprising. But yeah, no, don't worry. A few professors listening. But yeah, it's surprising to see how much more kids know about themselves. I feel like adults sometimes really don't realize that we actually do kind of have some ideas of where we're going. And
oh, yeah.
We make decisions. You know, I don't know. I mean, I definitely agree with that.
And I think that when we lack when young people lack the places to practice, I think that, you know, there's a term that I use called the setup, which has a lot of elements to it. But one of them is that just like you talked about before, there's, you know, let's say, you know, a senior in high school, you know, a young woman who is like president of the debate team and, you know, has like a 4.0 and plays the violin and saves the world through community service and global warming over the weekend. Is really set up to feel that she is assertive and she is intellectually assertive, but that same young woman is someone who calls my number where teens call or email me when they are experiencing regret or have just made a decision that deals with regret. And that's that same young woman who was at a party and had some dude's hand on her thigh and she was like, she had duct tape over her mouth. It was like she felt gagged and silenced. That's the kind of assertiveness that it just so doesn't matter if you have an A in chemistry.
Exactly.
If you can't honor yourself or figure out what the hell that even looks like in the real world.
Because you can't get anywhere with those qualifications and everything if you don't have personal assertiveness and, you know, standing up for situations where you don't feel comfortable like that. It's very true.
It's so true.
And what's the hardest part been for you of doing this job?
Wow, that's such a good question. I think two things. One is just the depth. I have such a passion for youth rights and I love my students so much. And if any of them are listening or at this at some point, I love you guys so much.
You can tell too. It really, you can feel that.
Yeah.
And when it's not there, you can feel that.
I agree. I think that, I hope that they can tell, but, I think what's so hard is that I feel so honored to share in the lives of so many young people that what's really hard is when they do experience something that is so, so hard and difficult, and it's either trivialized, or they feel that they can't connect either with their parents or with others in their life. And that loneliness, I really feel that on their behalf. That's
so
really
just
hard.
A lot of empathy with the students, it sounds like, is
very much
the most challenging. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, God, I feel like a war horse at this point. I've really been doing this almost 20 years, and, it's just never, my job is never boring. You know, it's never boring.
Yeah.
But it is hard to fight. It's more adults where I'll come into a school community or a group, and the kids will, God, they're just amazing with the questions that they have. They're incredibly intelligent questions. Mm-hmm. Really just, you know, can you give me the tools so I can navigate through the real world? And then having a school say, okay, great. Now we've done that one day of, you know, drug education or, you know, thanks. They know how to put a condom on. Yeah. You know, in 5 years, we'll check in with you again. And the students are like, can we do this more often?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have to be with me.
No one else is in that position where they're willing to give information like the people who do the job you do.
I think there's more. Thank goodness that you've had. I mean, the person that you had on with just the other week is an example of just so many more people coming
up. Vanessa Van Petten is who she's talking about. And it's true. There's a whole kind of new push, I think, for youth advocacy because people are kind of realizing that we really are. I mean, of course, children are always the ones who are going to end up leading, you know, the future world. And so it's important that when kids are having all these issues and it's such a high stress environment, a lot of what I talk about is college and just how stressful that is for kids.
God, it's crazy.
Yeah. And so it's great that there's people like you who are starting to really realize someone needs to speak out for them. And have you come up against, I mean, you were saying you have, but what's it like working with these parents or teachers that are kind of almost going against what you're teaching? I mean, with sex ed, especially, there's a lot of people who are very reluctant to realize that some kids will end up having sex, you know, within the time they're in high school. How do you deal with those parents and teachers?
You know, I've been really lucky to be based here in the Bay Area. That's really helpful. But I'm also very surprised even around the country how schools have really come around because they're realizing that this thing that people used to call character education or is important just because they're seeing that, you know, they're having the same discipline issues over and over again or the same depression rates or and realizing that what I emphasize is important. And so a lot of schools have really come around and there's some amazing schools
That's
and the parents.
Very good to know.
It's always straight now that I'm a parent myself. It's so I realize that the parents I work with, for the most part, they love their kids so much. They're willing to just say, okay, just tell me, you know, I just want them to, you know, I want to connect with them. And so, yeah, I feel actually far more lucky. I have, though, been escorted off a few school campuses.
Wow, what happened? Tell that story.
I have to do it without, you know, so hard in my line of work because it's all anonymous, you know, so much of the youth I work with and schools.
Oh, I see.
Sometimes I would definitely want to protect their privacy, but there are schools that are willing to, they say that they want curriculum development or they want me to come in and do a workshop. And I even give an outline of what my workshop is. And this is what I'm going to emphasize with your students. And then it's different to have sometimes some more conservative programs sit and actually listen to the workshop. And there was definitely one where I was asked to leave immediately.
They
even hired me my own cab.
What did you say? What was the words that
you know what's really amazing? Oh my God, Abby, it was, I didn't even say anything like, you know, masturbation or, I never said vagina.
Wow.
I said,
good monitoring.
I said,
I tried to avoid it.
I said, I think what I said earlier that what you are experiencing outside the classroom can inform you as well, if not better, than what you're learning in the classroom. And
that was the thing that
freaked them out. And I just thought, you know, Oh, well.
I wish you'd had time to get to the other stuff. Gosh. That's,
exactly. I know. It was so funny, too, because I heard from so many students after that workshop through email. Like, okay, since you're not coming back, because I'm sure you never will.
Yeah.
Give it, but again, at least I got to some, and they had amazing, great questions and stuff. So, for the most part, though, I feel just so lucky. The schools and parents are just really, really just want teenagers to be happy, which is nice.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's, these statistics are coming back and people are realizing that I was reading actually on your website and you were saying they're realizing that certain types of education just aren't working and it's plain statistics and they're seeing these things that, you know, it's like depression rates or pregnancy rates.
Date rape.
And they have to try, date rape, and they have to try things that are more, you know, no offense, but empathizing with the kids more than some of the other programs.
Exactly. They are realizing,
even if they're
like,
reluctant.
Yeah. And your your example of abstinence only education, I mean, that was, they had all the evidence, you know, all the evidence after they passed welfare reform. And then after the evidence in even in 2006, when it came back that 88% of the people who participated had sex within, like, you know, at the 4 years was on the, you know, later side.
End,
you know, Bush then put in another, you know, several millions of dollars to fund abstinence only. And so this, but most schools that were paying attention, you're right. They said, okay,
they
obviously
realized.
I think we need to give teenagers information, which is pretty amazing in the year that is now, that that's a radical thought to give teenagers real information. And
it's strange that that's what they're not doing. It's not like they're not encouraging them to have sex. It's just straight how you, I mean, it's information. Yeah, that's.
Yeah. Well, I think we're really, surreal. I think adults and parents are real victims to fear because you're, you know, I know that for my own kids, you know, I swear as soon as my kid came out, now I'm just want to make sure she doesn't die. It's
exactly.
Just, it's like, that's what you think about all, so oh my basic. God, she lived another day. That's so great. What can I do to keep that happening? But I think that, that idea of this fear that teenagers can't make choices. And so what we're doing is we're preventing, we're not giving them the chances to make the choices. Mm-hmm. We're shutting out opportunities. Things are getting more academic and less experiential in education. Mm-hmm. We're over-programming our kids so that they have little time to actually just experience life. And now what, failing is what, an A minus or a B plus? So that just seeps into the marrow of a young person. And then we basically don't give them any information because we're scared they're going to make the wrong choices with that information. And it just, it's kind of feels like being hobbled, I would think. You know, you're kind of stuck.
Well, exactly, because you can get no information and still make the wrong choice, but then you have horrible consequences because you had no information.
That's
when
such
you're
a,
making
this
bad choice.
Exactly. And how many people do you know that have been in that situation?
I mean, it's like any teen. I personally probably know more people than some, but I think any teen knows one of their girlfriends or someone else who's been in a situation with the direct consequences, whether it be for sex ed, pregnancy, dealing with trying to go behind their parents' back to get contraception because they don't have the support, or, you know, I mean, it's really intense. You don't think, and actually in our own town, there's been a lot of more girls recently, I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but have had the babies too. Mm. There's been younger girls who are having, and also I want to say really quickly, just for our viewers, keep in mind some of this, you might say, like, if there's conservative people watching, yes, it's liberal, but I feel like as a teen, it's not, I mean, it's political, but it's very personal. It's not, I'm not saying this because of any agenda or anything. It's just, this is how, I'm just talking about the direct effects on teens.
Right.
And it's not, oh, you know, like, they shouldn't pass a law. It's like, no, but I'm feeling the direct effects of, for example, the abstinence only, not me personally, I'm at a private school, but my friends have abstinence only education. And one of my good girlfriends was telling me about how scared it makes her feel because it's like they literally were they were so encouraging kids to take promise rings and things like that.
Yeah.
And it really freaked her out because they were almost forcing it on kids who didn't feel comfortable doing that.
Right.
Which is weird. I don't know. Anyway. So
well, and,
it's just,
and what you're talking about is exactly what that does is then you are actually planting the seeds for guilt and shame.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point.
And that's
what... Sorry about the fly.
There's a fly flying around.
There's a fly in the room.
That's why I'm flailing around. Yeah. So what the whole goal, at least for me, is to help to listen to teenagers, but also get other people to listen to teenagers and figure out where you are, where do you want to be? And then, you know, let's navigate what are some of the obstacles, not what should you do, but based on my experience of having the same conversation for 20 years, here are some things I've seen that could hold you up. Mm-hmm. And let's be just as ready for those as you might be for an exam.
Yeah.
You know, or,
that's
an, you know,
that's a good
why not
way to
think?
Deal with it.
You wouldn't walk into an essay exam and not have any idea what you think the question might be. But I just feel like we're setting young people up to walk into social or more dangerous situations without even any kind of a plan. And it doesn't have to be a very formal plan. But again, how do I avoid regret? And the whole, I feel like I feel like when you talk about like hookups and pot, I think are really similar in that they're really examples of how the conversations that so many people have are so full of judgment. It's either good or bad. And we're so busy saying why they're good and why they're bad that there's never room for just some real meaningful conversation.
And so you
never really get anywhere except to decide, you know, pot is really amazing because it's natural and it's organic and it's here for us to enjoy or... Yeah. The other side, you know, don't smoke or the gateway will suck you into a vortex of dropping out of school and you'll go to prison and you'll die, you know? And that's kind of an extreme example. but know what I mean?
The point is, it's the judgments.
Yeah,
I mean,
completely.
Like, there's all these education and all these educators. And then you get people coming in who are saying things that are judgments of whether it be drugs, alcohol, or sex, specifically those three things. And what happens is when they make the judgments, the kids have their own judgments. And instead of getting information, they're just hearing judgments that they already know adults are making.
Right.
And they just go right against it.
Right. Or, they go right against it.
Because there's it's like, why would you change your mind just hearing the same thing of how it's bad?
Right.
You need to hear facts about what it does to you physically.
Right.
What can happen. You know, I mean, which is exactly what you tell kids.
Yeah. And the effects emotionally. How do you, you know,
very big part of it.
It just gets, you can get so stuck.
And kind of on that question, might as well start with the nitty gritty of it. What do you see as some of the problem? We'll start out with drinking before the drugs.
Uh-huh.
But what do you see as some of the problems or the biggest problem with underage drinking? In your experience, what have you seen?
Yeah. And again, most of this, I mean, obviously some of this is opinion, but what I comes from just what I'm seeing and what I hear about. And what I think is interesting is that when we talk about, you know, and I do all the neurobiology, with, you know, young people in my drug education workshops and really just talk about the facts of, you know, what does each category of drug do inside the brain and what does your brain look like when you're doing this? But when I think about underage drinking, and I'm not saying that there is definitely an impact on especially your age group's brain development and alcohol. That's very true. Of equal importance, and maybe perhaps with some people even more so, are what concerns me with underage drinking are the decisions that young people make when they're wasted. And so that to me is what concerns me the most, or just the, you know, the amazing, you know, young woman that we talked about before, who either is her academic training is for intellectual assertiveness and for academic success.
Yeah.
What you do is you please authority and you figure out what the rest of the herd is doing and you do it a little bit better. Okay. That recipe sucks for personal success because in a situation where you are trying to find joy instead of regret, you do not necessarily, you want to figure out, you want to ignore the herd.
Yeah.
And you certainly do not want to please anything or person that you feel has more power than you do in that moment.
Exactly.
And that same young woman who feels sort of sucked into, which is a whole nother setup around drinking of why I think so many young people are drinking and drinking as much as they are. That same young woman ends up, you know, underneath some guy with, you know, her pants around her ankles and trying to figure out how she got there.
Yeah.
And that's what concerns me most graphically about underage drinking.
Yeah.
And no, also just the staggering, like what the last survey I checked out that I trust from sources that I trust are about 73% of young people. And that's from the ages of 15 to 21 say that, you know, after two or three drinks, they don't use a condom.
Yeah. That's so scary.
That's just as scary as drunk driving.
Yeah.
You know, the consequences,
well, the consequences
can be,
can be just as bad or worse, depending on the type of, you know, situation you get into.
Right.
Gosh.
And again, I, you know, I'm so careful in my workshops to make it really clear that I'm not saying, and I know you know this because we, you've been in some of my workshops, but I'm not saying don't have sex. I am absolutely not saying that. I'm also not saying, you know, after this show, let's go tell 15 people to go have sex. I'm not saying that either, but, and I'm not telling people to not do drugs. What I'm saying is the incident I see, how many of these decisions might end in regret. That's what it's all about. If you, if you have decided to have sex, I mean, go for it.
Yeah. You know? And like you said, she gives the example. If you want to have sex with a lot of people at a party and you're doing it for yourself, you're doing it safely. It's, of course, we're not condoning, you know, underage sex, whatever. But the point is, you do it, you do what you do so that you don't have regret.
And exactly. And and really
to
honor yourself enough to figure out what are your values and your, and if that doesn't, if that empowers you and you can back that up and you feel that you, you do not experience regret from, you, no one is allowed to tell you what you can or can't do with your body that, and your mind and your heart. But again, that's why, you know, I just feel that it doesn't, I think if young people had more support and more real information, I don't, I think so many of these stats would go down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, and then you were saying you have to figure out what your morals are. Do you ever help girls or guys with trying to figure out what they believe in?
Yeah. And
how
that's what's
that?
That's what's so exciting. And that's a real tricky dance, you know, because, I also, you know, I, you know, I really encourage young people to not just question authority, but question everything, including me, you know, and,
which
and
is very cool.
It's so important. But what's really, I always, what I tell parents, I heard, some dude say it that I was, went to a talk on and I loved it. He said to, adults, don't inflict help, which I thought was such a great term because I think that's what we, as, you know, whatever an adult is, adults do to younger people. But what I think can be really powerful, at least with the young people that I work with is, rather that there is no, you know, shoulds or anything like that, but really just reflect. Cause a lot of young people, they just need someone to hold a mirror up and say, okay, let's just look, let's look at what you're doing. Let's think about the last four things you did that sucked. And then how do we not do that anymore in some way? And really start to question what your values are. So, like one example is, I'm trying to think of something to make it more real. How about there was a group of young women recently who were really touting the power of hookups and how they felt really they really you know, and they were known for doing a lot of hooking up, and I was frustrated when
was it a group of friends?
It was a group of girlfriends, and the school you know, or the group that had me come in really wanted, you know, I don't know if it was talk some sense into them or whatever. My point was, I'm not going to tell, I will not come in there and tell them that they, this is ridiculous. How are we supposed to tell? We have no right to do that. However, I think it was really helpful for them to be able to have a conversation where they felt they were not judged and to have a mirror held up and figured out. And in this particular situation, and sometimes, you know, we discover together that, you know what, keep the behavior. Going. This seems to be working for you. That's great.
Which is an interesting discovery.
It's very
kind of counterintuitive for most adults, I think.
And I think that adults really, we need a wake up call to really look at how some things have definitely will always stay the same, but some things have changed. And, but in this situation, questions that can be helpful in that is, let's walk through, do the hookups have anything in common? And, and what is it? Tell me how it empowers you. And then let's just hold a mirror up. So, for example, in this situation, it was striking to me how many of the hookups involved blowjobs. Now, for example, Yeah. And it was, of course, girl on guy in this situation. This was not same, wasn't same sex hookups, and it wasn't, you know, a heterosexual hookup with a guy, you know, going down on a girl. So my question is to them was, let's just deconstruct that a little bit rather than, and it's not judgment hookups are bad or good, but let's just look at this pattern of how often you're servicing somebody else. And then let's just hold it up. So tell me what it looks like, and to have them have the opportunity to say, well, it seems like the last four or five times, well, I don't know, I'm on my knees and he stands there and takes about, and having her be able to hear herself say that is like,
look,
oh, that kind of sounds not great not when I say it out loud. Yeah. So I'm like, so let's talk, you know, so I just feel that we put young people so often in a defensive position that they're really forced to defend what they're doing, but not given a chance to actually reflect on it, because we just shove them into a corner of judgment. And I hope I'm not giving adults a bad name, although I think we've earned it. But I think on a lot of levels, it's just a very confusing area. And I just think the more we really have real conversations, it won't be so confusing.
Yeah. And that's a good point, because the method of having her just say what the facts were of what was going on, a lot of times, like if someone was called into that situation by educator or another adult in the situation to convince them kind of out of it, then I personally, not saying I do that, but I would be defensive, because if they were telling me, oh, you know, like that's really not a good idea for you guys to be doing that, of course your first instinct, well, okay, but I think it's fine. But if you go in and you say things like, okay, so tell me exactly what's happening.
Right. And how is that different than an adult? Wouldn't an adult do the same thing if they were, if your behavior was called into question?
That's a good point.
And again, what we do is that, again, we're more practiced in academic or intellectual assertiveness. So now we're stuck where we have to defend our argument. And you can have an enormously powerful theory. I could come up with a great argument, you know, or, and I've heard, you know, 15-year-olds come up with some really amazing arguments that are very intellectually assertive. Like, it is very empowering to have a boy in a situation where he's basically at your mercy. I could make one move with my mouth and I could, you know, so, and if you keep it on an intellectual level and don't dig down into the emotional, I don't think you're hitting the whole truth. So I just think that both avenues sort of need to be explored before you kind of, and that was such a long-winded answer to your question about helping young people figure
what
out what their values
in
are.
That particular situation.
That was so, it was so amazing to me, because these were eighth grade girls. And,
that's young.
And they were so, they came to me, all we did was just do that. I ended there. Just like, let's just look. And how does that, you know, what do you think about that? And some of them were sort of like, I'm not so sure. And others were still really, you know, holding staying the course. And then I just left my email, and every single one of them, some of them not knowing the other was, contacted me either by email or phone and said, I just want to have another one of those conversations.
Yeah.
And then realized that they were so angry at getting the reputation that they had gotten as sort of the sluts of the group, which is ridiculous that they would have. That's completely sexist, that simply because a young woman exhibits her sexuality, that she'd be stigmatized. But they also were really able to think about the fact that it really was feeding into some regret on their part and that they wanted to sort of change things around. And
that's good that they.
Yeah, that was just, that was so.
Did any of the girls still defend the point and kind of feel comfortable with the hookups that they were having?
That's a good question. I didn't hear back from two of them, but one of them said that she wasn't there yet, that she was still, it was really helpful to think about it, but she was going to just see how it went. But at least she felt that that was helpful information. It was nice for her to see another side.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then that's a good point too. We talked about this, just some gender stuff is, when one of the workshops that I had with Kara, she brought up the point that you're a slut if you're a girl.
Right.
And you hook up with a lot of guys. I'm sure most of you are familiar or have thought about this at least once. And then a lot of the times with guys, you're a pimp. I don't know how you phrase it. And
young people phrase it better than I do. And if anyone's listening now, you know, too bad you can't call in and have, you know, everyone say it.
We're actually, that's the next step in the show.
Oh, cool.
So,
But yeah, it's we have the total double standard where, mm-hmm. you know, if a girl actually is assertive sexually or even socially at a party, yeah. you know, she is basically called a whore or a slut by both boys and girls. Mm-hmm. And if a boy does the exact same thing, he is a pimp. He's a player. He's great. And then the double standard exists. And then the other thing that really around gender that's so challenging is that on the flip side, if a young woman, she's a slut if she's assertive sexually.
Yeah.
If she also honors the fact that she's not exactly sure, so she's gonna move forward sexually a little bit, or and then, you know, let's just say things are hot and heavy at one point, and she honors the fact that she's ready to pull back.
Yeah.
What is she then?
And she's like a prude.
She's a prude.
Yeah.
She's a tease. She's a prude. Yeah. And if a boy, and I talk to so many amazing young men who are like, I don't want to go in. I just, yeah. you know, they feel pressured as well. And at the same time, if they express hesitation or they don't come on strong, they like either their sexual orientation, which is a whole other issue, is questioned, or yeah, they're just like the total dweeb.
Yeah. And, that's true.
And so again, when you talked about the underage drinking, mm-hmm. so again, we now, our culture, this has always sort of been an issue, but now the stakes are so much higher because there's more drugs and there's more alcohol and there's mm-hmm. just a lot more everything.
Yeah.
That, so what a young person does is if you feel screwed either way, then there's just this enormous desire to remove accountability. Cause if exactly. you're going to be a slut, if you do one thing and a tease, if you do the other,
yeah,
I'm just going to get drunk.
And then because you then don't it, have then, to be responsible for the choices you make.
Or you can say, you can use that as an excuse.
Drunk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, how can we, that's an enormously stuck position to be in. And,
yeah.
So, and a lot of boys are the same way, you know, this coupled idea of a failure and failure now being the equivalent of like, whatever, a B plus or an A minus. I see so many of the younger people are just so scared of taking any risk without judgment. They feel so scared that they're not going to do something perfectly well, mm-hmm. that the drunk factor helps there because it's an excuse. Well, I might not have been a really, I'm sorry, I might have been a late, you know.
Yeah, like
somebody's
bad,
like, make
at
bad at whatever they were doing. Mm-hmm. And they could say, well, that's just because I was drunk.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, which that's I think, true. You know, in my generation, we did that too. I mean, but
I feel like it's really common now though. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I might be wrong, but I feel like there's so much partying and so much hooking up at parties and
yeah.
And I don't know what it was like before, but
yeah. Well, and the thing that really concerns me the most is who knows if it's the most, but it's when there's
yeah, one of the can say.
But I, you know, one of the things that I do that's extremely controversial, and I don't mm-hmm. do it for anybody that might be listening that hires me on a regular basis, I don't do it without checking with at least one person ahead of time, and it's not required. But part of my sex education workshops are, at least in a school setting, I do voluntary after it's over. I let young women know that they call it hand job 101, and mm-hmm. it sounds, boy, if you're not really deconstructing like we talked about and really thinking about this, and if we just go to the judgment, this can seem like a ridiculous
extreme.
Idea. but one of the pros mm-hmm. of being, you know, old and in this field mm-hmm. is that I have the experience to know what works and what doesn't work. And I know that what I see happening and the reason that I do this workshop is that in the last 4 years, I can't even count the number of phone calls and conversations I have with young women who are so scared that in a hookup or in a sexual situation, they're going to do something not perfectly or not well, and someone's going to talk about them, that they would rather have intercourse because then they can just lay there and, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of straightforward. And I am not telling people to have sex or not have sex, but for me, that's a decision to have sex that's really born from regret or fear.
Yeah.
And that's a
fear
of
judgment.
Just, ugh. So in other words, again, I do take giving teenagers tools and information kind of to an extreme on that. But I feel like if we can give just one example of how you can fool around and not necessarily have intercourse and put yourself at risk, and still feel empowered, and also share something with your partner. I do not feel that that promotes or condones sexual activity. In fact, I know, and I have heard from over and over again from girls who have said that has helped so much.
Yeah, you know, because, and just to kind of lay it out more, what would happen then is if a girl's in a sexual situation where she doesn't feel that comfortable, but she doesn't want to have sex, what happens is if you've learned, it sounds extreme, but how to give a hand job and you're confident in it.
Right.
And like I said, you know, of course, this is a very, we're rated explicit. So, yeah. You know, whatever.
And now I'll never work again.
No, but well, that's the thing. She asked permission and, you know, there's a whole process to get to this point. It's not just with every single thing or whatever, right. But girls will volunteer to learn how to do this. And then they have a tool so that if a guy wants to do something, they don't have to just be so scared to do a bad job that they'll just lay back and have sex.
Exactly.
Which is what you're saying. But
again, which is surrendering your power.
Yeah. Because of fear.
Because of fear. Exactly.
And so then, let's see, you were talking about sexual orientation. I also wanted to ask you, so you do these workshops, and for example, you have different kinds of workshops, but for the sex ed workshop, mm-hmm. how do you involve bi and gay teens? And for example, if there's like a transsexual teen or whatever, how do you make the situations you're giving and the advice you're giving apply to their life?
It's very, it's really challenging. And that's what's, since I've started Prajna, it's been mm-hmm. so helpful because teenagers can form their own groups. We call them sex slumber parties, where they're groups of friends or certain clubs or people that are either of a certain sexual orientation or in a certain stage of development. Some might be much more naive. Some may be much more experienced. We can cater a workshop more to that specific, because it's a real dance. I try to use gender neutral language.
But it's hard because things like STDs or pregnancy, it's just, well, okay, not STDs, that's not true. But pregnancy doesn't even apply at all to someone who's having gay sex.
So. Yeah, and you also don't want to, especially in a classroom situation, you don't want to single out somebody and have everyone all
that's
of a sudden be
true.
Thinking of
that's
like,
a good point.
You know, those three people
yeah.
in the room. So
that's
it's hard to
it's
both
hard
honor
to kind of...
and not further isolate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge, but I've heard, it's really neat to hear from students. As a follow-up, I always leave my business cards and then preface and end with, I would like to say that as hard as we try, this is very heterosexually based.
Yeah.
And to really, that I realize because, that and honor it. And please, you know, if you have further questions, although we do give definite examples of birth, not birth control, but
like
safe
STD
sex
prevention.
And STD prevention.
Or STI, I guess.
Yeah, but it's just a tricky, again, that's why so few people, the three areas that I, you know, social justice and ethics and human development, very few people go into these fields because they're just really hard to do well. And I feel like even if I'm doing an adequate job, I just feel like at least somebody's doing something.
It's
you know
true.
What I mean?
No,
so
yeah.
It's nice to not be a perfectionist and be in this position.
Yeah. You can't be a perfectionist. Cause kids come to you with all kinds of different problems.
Yeah.
And this might be a hard question to answer. Has there ever been something really surprising come up as an issue, either one-on-one or, during a workshop, or just a surprising question you've gotten or situation?
I would have to think about that. I do. It is funny. Actually, you know, so many things come, like I just had like
I'm sure
a movie go through my mind.
In
my line of work, it's so funny because my junk mail, I have to sort so carefully because like something that says like erectile dysfunction could actually be something that I need to respond to. So,
a real
so I have
question.
To go through one by one. How large do
that's
you want
hilarious.
Your penis? But I think about that if somebody were to monitor my email, because I did at one point have, I had two, it was a senior girl and it was a senior, yeah, it was a senior girl and a college age young man. And they, he had just graduated, so they'd gone through high school together, had started, been dating about 2.5 years, and he'd mm-hmm. moved on to college, and the young woman was now a senior. And he started emailing me questions, specific questions on how to honor her further in a sexual way. So I felt like Dr. Ruth, in this way. And it was very interesting. It wasn't about, you know, because I get some pretty hardcore, you know, how much heroin can I do? And if I mix it, I mean, I'm really used to some much more of the hardcore. So what was surprising to me to have this ongoing conversation, which really, if it was monitored, might seem very strange, but to have this young man say, you know, this is sort of where I'm headed. And I would, you know, email back and say, I think head south a little more or move to the move to the right. Or have you tried? And then what was so great is it's like a year and a half or 2 years later, I got a thank you letter from the young woman signed also by him. And that they were still together. And she's like, I just want to thank you because we have the best sex life in the world. And I'm like, whoa, woohoo.
You know, totally like helped him through like kind of a happy.
Yeah. So and it was nice to not. Yeah. Have it be such a dire, you know,
that's true. Because some situation. Of the questions you're answering, especially the drug ones, you give a drug workshop, like you were saying, the heroin. How would you get the facts for that? Do you just know? I mean,
it took that's taken a lot of research on my part and a lot of work. And I, in drug education, I think is so sketchy because you can really just go in and either teach kids how to do drugs. You know, if you're not careful, you're basically saying, oh, here, if you want to try this, this is how you. So it's something that I feel really good about how I present it. And I feel but you do get some dicey questions. I think one surprising thing or difficult thing that now I'm a little more used to. But the first time it happened, what surprised me was how hard, like keeping confidentiality is very easy for me for youth. And I've said before, you know, that I will, you know, go to jail before I will ever, you know, defy confidentiality, unless of course it deals with harm to self or others. And
Do you have to report that you're a certified?
Depending upon where I am. Yeah. But okay. I'm not a counselor. What's really neat is I'm not a therapist.
Yeah.
And I am, I really stress that because I do have opinions and I do. Yeah. So I'm sort of this mix of an educator and an advocate. Yeah. But what's hard is when I'm actually working with a parent community as well as a student community that I've become tight with. And there have been situations where, for example, one student from a school, I don't even think it was in California, I can't remember, but most recently, called and this person asked, he basically said, I snuck out of the house and got stoned with my friends. And one of them freaked out. And so called 911 because he's just kind of losing it. And, and so all of our friends ran and left, but I've decided to stay, but I want to know what are my legal rights. Cause the cops are on the way. What can I do?
Oh, and that's timing crucial situation too.
Totally. But here's the hard thing is here's this amazing decision. First of all, to not bail.
That's really commendable.
And then just to try to figure out, do I have to, you know, what are my rights in this situation? How do I also help my friend? But then when I did a parent workshop, the parents, I figured out it was the parents of that same kid came up to me and said, we don't know what to do with our kid. You know, he snuck out, got stoned with his friends. He's a total mess up. We can't trust him with anything.
No.
And I'm sitting there thinking, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I can't tell these parents that their son
was the
made
only
an
one.
Ethical choice that was so rare for someone his age. And that someone that makes those choices, you need to really honor that and think about it. But that's the thing, is that we so often get only half the picture.
Yeah, and they have no way of knowing that their son was the only one who stood with his friend.
Right. Yeah.
That's, it's a hard position to be in, hearing both sides of the story like that.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's strange. Yeah, and, well, okay. Now, I have another question. What were you like as a teen?
Oh my gosh, wow. That's so funny. I think one of the things that I, you know, when we talk about in some of my workshops, we talk about gender and how gender informs something we call fallback positions, which is where do you go when you just aren't even thinking, you're just scared and you're uptight and nervous. The brain, you go to extremes and you go to a fallback, which are what are some things that you used to do to cope when you were younger that now just pop in. And for young women, a lot of time, it's the pleaser.
One.
It's like, what do you need me to say right now? And girls get very good at anticipating that before even their teacher or their parent knows what it is. And they say it. And it just really slows the evolutionary process of figuring out who you are. And I was that kid. I was so good at trying to figure out what's going to really make this person happy right now. And then maybe they'll like me. And then, and I was also a saver. I wanted to, you know, save all of my friends. And, but I was one of those kids that, I was friends with the partiers and I was friends with the students that were, and the young people who were also kind of marginalized. And I really was sort of a floater. And I think I really did become fairly irritated at the sameness of some of the cliques. So it was nice to float. I also just had a really tumultuous adolescence. Like, you know, some adolescents kind of skate through it, sort of this sort of even keel. I was not one of those teenagers. I spent a lot of just, you know, super like highs and super lows.
Yeah.
It was just a really emotional, I think some of my students, two of my former students are godparents to my children now.
Oh,
and, one is 30 now and one is 27. And something I had in common with them that they had when they were younger is that I felt turned inside out. You know, I felt like my filter, I felt everything very intensely and it took me a while to sort of harden up. And, and then I kind of swung the other way for a while. I was pretty cynical. And now I've sort of in that medium, I hope.
And but that's, I mean, not to say it's good to have an up and down adolescence, but I'm sure it informs the way you talk to kids, maybe even in a positive way, because you can really understand what those lows feel like, what the highs feel like, you know, just the feelings, the intense feelings that all these kids are having. I don't know.
It's really nice because
it helps the empathy.
Not only do I feel like as a consultant that I'll never consult without also teaching at the same time, because I think it's so important when I'm speaking, especially to parents or schools about adolescents, to be able to say, you know, I just was hanging out with some yesterday. So that staying connected as a teacher,
that is nice.
So I stay in touch with youth, but, and now I don't even know what I was talking about. I don't know.
Youth.
Something about being young connected. I don't know.
Well, it's fine. Anyway, let's see. How do you think the media has influenced teen sexuality, specifically probably girls' sexuality, but guys and girls too?
Yeah, I think, it's true. It affects both genders a lot, but I think the consequences and the stakes are higher for young women as a result. But I think we talked before about the stigma, I think, of... you know, of this distrust of youth. But I swear, if you were just to like watch television or look at a magazine, and I talk about this with young people all the time, and I tell them, you know, if you were to really believe all of that and really soak that in, you would have no time for even like eating, because you're all having sex and doing drugs all the time.
It's so frighteningly extreme, these images that they're putting out there.
It's really remarkable. Yeah. And younger and younger, like really seeing, you know, girls who are 9 or 10, just really sexualized, and the makeup and the that removing them from who they are. The most striking thing what I talk to young people about, because you can, again, media education can also be done really badly, but but is this idea of subject versus object. So when you look at the media and you look at these images of women, how many of those images is the woman the subject? And how often is she the object? And it's pretty staggering how much it is the latter.
Yeah.
And I just feel that I talk to some young women who are either frightened to go to parties because of, you know, the dancing can be just, freak dancing can scare the hell out of somebody. And also just younger and younger girls like simulating sexual activity that they've never experienced and don't even really want to.
Understand what, exactly.
So I think and they feel somehow... that this is normal. This is what they're supposed to be doing because they see it everywhere.
Yeah. And when you critically look at those roles in media, and you did a workshop with us, I think, on that, where we looked at subject and object.
Right.
And it's just surprising. You just never would notice daily flipping through magazines. You never comprehend what you're actually looking at.
Exactly.
And when you break it down, it's just so kind of scary how unempowered the women are in.
It is.
In
you have to really, again, take apart what women's power really means. What does it mean to be empowered as a young woman? And it's really, it's so overwhelming the imagery.
How do you think that affects guys, though?
I think, you know what, there's this great film that won some award at some, which one? It wasn't Sundance, I don't think, but mm-hmm. it's called, let me think if the memory is going to kick in again. It's called Wet Dreams and False Images. It just came out and it's like a 15 minute film. And it's really cool because it's a short documentary mm-hmm. about this guy who runs, I think it's a barbershop or something in New York City. And he is talking and he has pictures of women all over his shop and all of his friends all like contribute to it.
Whoa.
And the person who's documenting, who is a woman, comes in and says, like, how many of these do you think are real images? And he's like, oh, you can tell these aren't airbrushed. I only picked the ones that aren't. You know, because you can see this tiny little thing here. Yeah. So this is an airbrush. And at the end of it, it shows the person who basically does touch-ups and shows that almost every single one of those images wow. is not a real woman. It's... And for him to see his face, and its title is because, you know, he realizes that he's been fantasizing
yeah.
about something that doesn't even exist. And the impact
so scary.
And the enormous amount of judgment that he himself felt in walking down the street, like, oh my God,
that girl doesn't look
yeah,
like
she's got cellulite or, yeah. you know, and I just, that I think it's pretty amazing. But when I do, and I think I did this with you guys too, gender, we do this thing like called a fishbowl where the guys are able to have a conversation and the girls can listen.
One of my favorite parts, by the way, really cool idea.
And then the girls are able to do the same thing, but the people that are listening in are not allowed to speak and they have mm-hmm. to. And it's so incredible because the boys almost always have a longer conversation than the girls.
Wow.
And when I talk and ask specific questions, what are the five most important things about a woman to you? And what yeah. are the five most important things you think you're supposed to say are the most important? And the disparity is really incredible. Like, you know, it's like an amazing smile. I want to be able to talk to her. I want to not feel stupid.
So sweet.
You know, it just, that idea. And then, how many of them, when I say, you know,
what do you
if you could have this gorgeous or this idea of how they have this conversation that a girl can be totally hot. And as soon as, she, you know, if her personality or her character is either, you know, mean spirited or mm-hmm. whatever, catty, that physically they begin to change in front of their eyes, you know,
yeah.
and that's just real life. And
yeah.
and it's very true in the opposite where you can look at, you know. The boys will talk about looking at a girl and she's like, she's cool and she's nice. And then when you start to, you know, things start to develop and all of a sudden it's like she biologically changes in front of you. She's like the yeah. hottest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
But that intimidation that so many boys feel that, okay, now does she fit into, in order for my guy friends to meet her, does she mm-hmm. fit into whatever it's supposed to be beautiful? So I think boys feel, you know, almost equally trapped in some way.
That's true. And then, okay, so we're going to wrap up soon. We're kind of coming to the end now. What, how can families play a positive role in their teens' decision making?
Mm.
How could a mom or dad kind of impart some of this information to their kid and help them make these choices?
I think, you know, in a 1 minute response in such a complicated,
well, it doesn't have to be 1 minute.
I know, but this idea of not inflicting help is so important. And,
yeah.
and this idea too, that if you can't talk to your kid comfortably, then you can't talk to your kid about sex or drugs. That's just kind of yeah. a no-brainer. And the idea of not having the talk, but just having conversation mm-hmm. and not forced conversation. And developmentally, there's just enormous differences too, you know, from a sophomore boy to, you know, a senior boy. Or what I think is important is that young people, they want self-worth, they want connection, and they want joy.
Yeah.
If I think the more that parents can just present themselves as a safe place to have a conversation, to be in the same place in the house at a certain time where you don't have to have a talk, but you know that your dad's or your mom's going to be sitting at the kitchen table pretty much every day around like between whatever, 4:30 and 5:00. Just it's know that somebody is there. And again, to not to listen for every 3 minutes. Your kid talk for one.
Yeah.
Just little things like that are just so, they're just so key. And this idea that if your teenager expresses ambivalence or concern or hesitation about a decision they're making, it doesn't mean that they're making bad choices. It means that they're experiencing ambivalence and hesitation
and
around
yeah.
a decision, which is what we as adults also experience. So if we begin to judge that, how the process that our kids are going through and how they make choices, they're just going to stop talking, you know? And, and that's, you know, that's just such a bummer because they're just an enormous, you know, resource.
No, a judgment-free zone is so nice to have as
huge.
A teen. It's just, especially with your parents and being able to really feel safe.
Yeah.
I can say that personally, my mom's a therapist, so I really feel like, you know, it's just the nicest part of having her as a mom is that she'll listen.
Yeah.
And she'll be there for me and I feel safe there.
What do you think? So, what else did I leave out? Because I think that, that safety is important, but there are other things.
I mean, for me, my brother is kind of experimenting right now.
Uh-huh.
And he's having a hard time, but it's kind of a weird position because my mom is like that. She's really caring and she's really lenient and she lets us make our own decisions and it's safe. She's just there for us kind of quietly.
Yeah.
But then what's happened with that is that he is making his own decisions. He's kind of stronger than her in the decisions that the family makes for what he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you go from there, though?
That, yeah,
it's almost more of a question.
You know, one thing that now that I, as a parent, I'm trying desperately to do, because, of course, my children are going to be the kids that never talk to me about anything, right? My students are always like, oh, my God, your kids are so lucky. And my kids are like 5 and 7.
Yeah.
And they're like, penis, penis, this, vagina, vagina, whatever.
Yeah.
Make good choices.
Yeah. So
what I tell parents now, what I've tried to do, like these two of my kids' godparents are former students of mine. And is you put people in place that your child feels comfortable with. It doesn't have to be you. You know, like, I don't care. If my daughter, you know, please, I hope this never happens, but if my daughter has an unwanted pregnancy, she doesn't need to talk to me. I just want to know that she knows someone she can talk to. And
good
it
point.
Really, it just, if it's, and hopefully it's someone I trust and respect. So the more people I can put out there for her and keep connected to as a family, I just feel like I have that arsenal. So those, you know, two former students of mine, it's their job to keep my kids alive through adolescence.
That's perfect. What, and so what's, just closing piece of advice you would give a teen? Sum up.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would say don't ever underestimate the journey towards joy. And really, there really isn't. And it's very hard when you're a teenager because very, very many people in power are going to tell you that a lot of other things are more important. And there's things you just have to buck up and do and blah, blah. That's all true. But the to seek joy and figure out what that looks like to you and just go for it. And just you know, whatever you can do to lessen regret. It's just, you know, this is a one shot deal.
Doing. Yeah.
It's a one shot deal. And to try so hard to at least make some choices with some information that you trust.
Yeah.
Wherever you can get it.
Get information and make those decisions.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you so
You're
much
like
for
the best interviewer I've ever had.
No, that's so sweet.
You're so good at this, Abby.
Thank you. Gosh. I mean, I'm trying.
You're doing an awesome job.
Thank you. Anyway, well, good. Thanks. So thank you so much for joining us, Karis. It's been wonderful having you on the show. Thanks to everyone for listening. I hope you got a lot out of the conversation. Like I said, pretty liberal. We talked about some intense topics, but it really needs to get out there. And hopefully some of the information was really helpful.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can find Karis at prajnaconsulting.com. That's P-R-A-J-N-A consulting.com. And this is Abby Laporte with Abby's Road. We'll see you next week.